वर्स नंबर 19, य एनम वेत्ति हन्तारम् यश्चैनं मन्यते हतम् उभौ तौ न विजानीतः नायं हन्ति न हन्यते। So yaha, when Krishna uses yaha, Bhagavan in the Gita, he means whoever. Yaha means whoever, male or female, young or old. Yaha means whoever that person is, maybe. Enam, enam means this. We have, remember we talked about enam, this consciousness. So one who, enam veti, knows this consciousness as the killer, hantaram. Yascha enam, and somebody else, manyate hatam. Some people says this consciousness is the killer, and somebody says consciousness is killed. He says, ubhav tau na vijanitaha. Both of them na vijanitaha, do not know. Why? Na ayam, ayam means this, na hanti, na hanyate. Neither it kills, nor it gets killed, nor does it propel others to kill. You say, okay, Atma doesn't kill. Atma doesn't get killed. But Atma, doesn't it propel me? Oh, you know, get up and take a sword and fight. No, it Atma does not even do that. It neither kills nor get killed, nor does it even give, encourage me to kill, propel me to kill. None of these three things apply in the case of Atma, Om, or consciousness. So the word Atma you should get familiar with. When we talk about Atma, we talk about the higher nature. So let us see that it says it is neither the killer nor the killed. Why does he keep talking about killing and killed? Because he's talking to Arjuna, who is about to fight a war. And that's why. But if he was to tell us, if I'm driving, it says neither does it drive, nor is it driven, nor it propels you to drive. If you are cooking, it will say neither does the Atma cook, nor it gets cooked, nor it propels you to cook. So it is a situational. So that's why, do not misunderstand that why is Bhagavan all the time talking about killing, because that is what Arjuna is going to be doing, unfortunately, the situation he is in. So he says the Atma is neither the killer nor killed. And that we have, you can accept, right? God is eternal. God always was, is, and always will be. All the scriptures say that. Bible says that, Quran says that. Bible says God alone was, and then he created the world in 6 days, and the seventh day he rested. And even when the Bible talks about the day of judgment, when there will be rain for 40 days and 40 nights and the whole universe will end, God will still live. Even our Puranas talk about pralaya, when the whole universe ends, God will still be alive. So it is neither slain nor it is the slayer. It is not the slayer. You say, not only it is not the slayer, it is non-doer and non-enjoyer. It does not do anything and it does not enjoy anything. They say, come on. How can you say that God does not do anything? Atma does not do anything. This consciousness does not do anything. So the example they give is the Natak Deep, the lamp. You know, the lamp in the Panchadashi is a beautiful book. Is an example of Natak Deep, the lamp. Now in the play, you go to watch a play and there is a lamp which is illumining the stage. Now when there was nobody in the hall, neither you were there, I was there, nor the actors, director, nobody was there, the lamp was lit, right? The lamp was illumining the stage, was turned on, and there was nothing on the stage and none of the audience. Now the lamp is lit, and then what happens? Then the actors come and they settle, get ready behind the backstage, and then the audience comes and they sit down, and then the curtain is opened and the actors are acting, and they're maybe in that scene there is one person who is very kind, loving, and they show a romantic scene, this, you know, boy and girl, and very sweet and very loving and very nice. And then after a while the villain comes, and then he kills the, you know, hero, and then he mistreats the heroine, and all the bad things happen, and he's doing horrible things. Now the lamp, is it affected? No, the lamp illumines the romantic scene and illumines the scene of murder. The lamp illumines both scenes, but does the lamp is responsible for the romantic scene? No. Is the lamp responsible for the killing? No. The lamp illumines both good and bad, love and hatred. But the lamp is eternal. In this particular case, of course, the lamp is lit, but in the case of Atma, so the lamp, for this example, the lamp was before the play, and the play occurs, and the acting occurs, and then also when the play ends, the actors leave, the director leaves, the audience leaves, the lamp is still lit, right? The lamp is still there, so the lamp was there before the play, is there during the play, and will be there after the play, in this particular example. So similarly, this consciousness, the Lord within us, only illumines all activities. That's why in the fifth chapter it says shrunvan, jigran, sprashan. So while I'm walking, while I'm talking, while I'm smelling, while I'm tasting, while I'm hearing, the consciousness within is not affected. Na kinchit karomi iti. That's what in the fifth chapter the consciousness says. I don't do anything. So the Lord within does not do anything, only gives us the ability. Just as the lamp does not do anything, just illumines. So whether I'm doing a good action and I'm loving and serving, or I'm doing a bad action, I'm murdering, killing, hurting, the consciousness within me is unaffected. The consciousness equally illumines both. They say, oh, there is so much killing in the world. Why does God not do anything? God says, I am the non-doer and the non-enjoyer. In my presence, everything is happening. I created the world. I gave human beings the ability to think, and I gave them the law of karma. If you do good, good will happen. If you do bad, bad will happen. But the Lord does not interfere. The Lord is a witness. Of course, if you approach the Lord with love and that's called bhakti, then yes, you will get energy from him. But for an ordinary individual, when they are working in the world, whether they are doing good or bad, the Lord is the non-doer, he's the non-enjoyer, he's just the illuminator. And all activities that are happening in the world, anything and everything that is happening, is in the presence of the Lord. Without the om, without the consciousness, would I be able to speak? No. Would you be able to listen? No. The consciousness is illumining. Illumining, again, when people hear the word illumining, they think it's some kind of light. It is not light. It's not consciousness. It's not lighting me up. It is giving me the ability to function, the ability to think. So it is called the light of knowledge. That's why you equate knowledge with light, because it is the light of knowledge. It is the ability to understand. And good and bad deeds will have their rewards and punishment. If I do good, I will be rewarded. If I do bad, I'll be punished. And again, the Lord has no part in it. He said, I don't na kinchit karomi iti. I don't do anything. It is you who are doing it. Up to the animal level, they don't have any freedom, from the plant to the animal. But human beings have the intellect, they have the ability, and depending on your actions, you will get good and bad result. But for a sage, for a saint who is identified with that consciousness, he or she says, I don't do anything. They can say that. Bhagavan Krishna could say that. Swami Chinmayananda can say that. Shankaracharya can say that. Vivekananda can say that. Once you have woken up to that consciousness, you can say that, but until then, you just have to see it. There's a very, very beautiful story about Sri Krishna and Sage Durvasa. It's actually Swami Bodhatmananda Ji, in his commentary, describes this beautiful story. As you know, Sri Krishna was, of course, incarnation of God himself, and he had actually married 8 wives. And he was a king, so kings in those days had multiple wives. And then there was an evil demon called Narakasura. We talked about that in the Diwali story also. So the Narakasura had actually kidnapped 16,000 girls and had kept them prisoner. And he had kidnapped them because he was a ruler of heaven, earth, Patal, all the worlds he had conquered. That's how powerful he was. And then the gods go to Krishna and then to ask him, can you please destroy this evil demon? And of course, Krishna was the incarnation of the Supreme, and he was able to destroy him. And all those 16,000 women now, since they had been kidnapped and kept in the prison of Narakasura, nobody would marry them because they all had technically been married to that Narakasura, to that demon, because he had said, I married them all. So they said, nobody will adopt us, so will you adopt us? So Krishna adopted them all. And that's why it is said he had 16,000 wives, 16,008. So, but it was very interesting. It was with his yogic power, he had given each one of them. So he had made 16,000 palaces, tiny small palaces. And so each one of those queens had a palace with servants and everything. And every night with his yogic power, he used to divide himself into 16,000 Krishnas. And so each Krishna would be with each wife. But he himself would be sleeping in his palace because he was none of those. That was just a yogic manifest. And in the morning, he would withdraw them all and just become one. So that was that's the story. Whether you believe it or not, but some people say symbolic means it is, we have 16,000 nerves, vessels, and arteries in our body, and the Lord is the power, is the owner of all. So that's the symbolic meaning of 16,000. But so the story goes like this. Let's come back to the story. So Sri Krishna had 16,000 wives. And one day some of his wives say that there was a sage Durvasa who was a very realized master. And we said, we want to take food. You know, it's always considered, that's why we always ask for bhiksha, that you bring bhiksha to the Swamijis. It is considered great punya to feed these sages. Oh, by the way, bhiksha doesn't mean dropping off the food and going. Please don't do that. You know, this time a lot of people did that. It is very disgraceful to you and to the Swami. When you bring the food, you sit down, you serve him yourself, and you get his blessings. You bow down, touch their feet. The bhiksha is not done just to, you know, give food to the Swami and leave a check and go. That is very disgraceful. Please do not do that. If it is your turn to do bhiksha, please bring the food, serve the Swami. That is a great punya, great merit in that. There is so much joy in serving these great Mahatmas. And then offer them the food lovingly and then get their blessings. It only takes half an hour or 1 hour. Are we that busy in our whole school? Oh, my kids are this. Come on, a little bit of time you can't spare. Does not mean to discourage you. But the idea is that if you have an opportunity to serve these Mahatmas, relish this opportunity. It is such a wonderful chance to sit with these. Even if it's not your turn for bhiksha, just come to the lectures and sit down and talk to him afterwards. Or even make an appointment, you know, because they are here all day. To be in the presence of them is a great blessing. So anyway, sorry, I digress from the topic because it happened a lot this week. So these wives of Sri Krishna had to go serve Durvasa. So they went, and there was a big river on the way. And that time there was no boatman. Boatman had a day off, and so there was nobody to cross the river. There was no bridge. So they come back to Krishna and say, sorry, you know, we can't go serve the sage. He says, why? He says, there's this big river. We don't know how to cross it. So Krishna says, go tell the river that if Krishna is Ajivan Brahmachari, the river should separate. So Ajivan Brahmachari means from childhood, he has never had a contact with a woman. So what? You Ajivan Brahmachari, you have 16,000 wives. How do you say that? He says, no, go tell the river, if Krishna is an Ajivan Brahmachari and never has had contact with a woman, the river should part. And they're very skeptical, you know, come on, it's not going to happen. But Krishna said, so they go there, they stand in front of the river and say, if Krishna is an Ajivan Brahmachari, the river should part. And literally the river separated, you know, it stopped and a path was made, just like Moses, you know, when he could pass. So he passed, they were surprised, and they went and the river came back. I said, this is strange. Anyway, okay, so they go, they feed the sage Durvasa, and now they have to go back, right? So what can they do? So they tell Durvasa, how are we to go back? So Durvasa says, what happened? He says, the river, you know, Krishna said, Ajivan Brahmachari, the river parted. Now what should we do when I go back? Durvasa says, just tell the river, if sage Durvasa is Ajivan Upavasi, the river should part. Ajivan Upavasi means he has never eaten. If sage Durvasa has never eaten ever in his life, the river should part. Come on, you know, you just ate, you know, whole dish we brought, you finished everything. Nothing was left. And you are saying you are Ajivan Upavasi. He says, yeah, just go tell the river. If say Durvasa is Ajivan Upavasi, the river should part. So again, very, you know, skeptically they go, they stand in front of the river. Oh, river, mother, you know, Mata, whatever, Godavari, whatever river it was. If say Durvasa is Ajivan Upavasi, the river should part. And the river parted and they crossed. So the moral of this story is that even though Krishna had many wives, but he actually was, he knew, I am the eternal consciousness. And the wives are not mine. The wives belong to the body. But as Atma, as consciousness, none of the wives belong to me. So I do not interact with women. As consciousness, all the interactions between a man or a woman or a child or a mother or a father are at the body level or at the mind level. But at the level of consciousness, there is nothing. That's why they say consciousness is non-doer and non-enjoyer. So in the highest reality, there is nothing happening in this world. Whatever is happening with the body. And same thing for the sage. He also was that evolved that he knew, I am that consciousness. I don't eat. See, the consciousness doesn't need to eat. The body needs to eat. And so he said, the body ate, but I am not the body. So I am Ajivan Upavasi. And Krishna could say, I am Ajivan Brahmachari. So the point is that a person who is identified with the consciousness will say, yes, the body is acting, the body is working, the body is eating, the body is getting old, the mind is sorrowful, the mind is happy, the intellect is, you know, successful, unsuccessful, knowing it. All those things are happening, but they are not happening to me because I am that consciousness. So that is the state of these great sages. Of course, Krishna, you say, oh, he was God himself. He could say that. But even Durvasa, who was such an evolved saint, that even living in this body, he could say, I don't eat. So that is this. So that's why I'm saying this second chapter should have actually been the 18th chapter, because it is gives us the highest knowledge. And at this level, it doesn't appeal to us. It's okay. Even if you don't understand it, even if you don't appeal it, even if you can't identify, it's okay just to listen. If nothing else, we are listening to the Lord's glory. You know, just think of it as that. And then slowly, Krishna will come down to our level where you can, I can understand. At this moment, I'm just speaking, you are just listening. But we are still not in that higher state like Durvasa or Krishna. But we can read about stories just as a basketball player likes to read stories about Michael Jordan or Kobe or, you know, why? Because, oh, how they, Magic Johnson, how they used to play. So that becomes his goal. Or a football player will read about Joe Montana. A physics scholar will read about Archimedes and Einstein, and you know, so same way you and I can read about these great masters and hope one day we all can reach that state. So that is the story of these and how these great masters lived in the world. So the idea of these stories is to see how these masters lived, how they functioned, and how they were living in the body, were able to rise above the body. And that is the essence of this story, that even while I am living in this body, I am not this body, that we have to understand, that I have to believe. And then in a few verses, it will become simple. So I know it is a little difficult to digest, but it's okay. Nothing else, just listen and say, okay, Bhagavan Sri Krishna has said the Gita, so out of devotion, I'm just listening and accepting it. So it depends where I am identified with. Like if I'm identified with my eyes, suppose my eyes become blind. So I say, I am blind. No, I am not blind. I am the consciousness. The eyes are blind. Yes, it is very sorrowful, but it is the nature of the eyes. If it sees or not, doesn't see, it is the eyes that are not functioning. But that's why Surdas Ji, this great saint, he could compose beautiful verses even though he was completely blind from birth. Beautiful songs he has composed in praise of Lord Krishna. How could he do that? Because he was not blind. Physically he was blind, but spiritually there's a very beautiful story about Surdas Ji. I can maybe tell you now. It's a very wonderful story. So it says Surdas ji was blind, but he wanted to experience Lord Krishna's presence. He wanted to see him, or he wanted to be close to him. So one day he was singing and he was just in that, you know, divine ecstasy, and suddenly he felt a presence next to him, and he knew Krishna was sitting next to him. And he quickly grabbed his hand, just like that, and Krishna's hand, Krishna didn't, like, you know, he knew that. And then Krishna freed himself and went away. So he says, Bhagwan, tum haath chhoda ke chale gaye, par man se chhoot ke jao tab main maanu. He says, you left my hand and physically you're gone, but can you go from my mind? When you go from my mind, then only I'll consider you God or infinite. So the point is that for these great sages, God is with them all the time. God never leaves them. He said, you left me physically, it's okay, but you can't get out of my mind. If you can, show me that. If you are truly God, can you do that? God says, no, I can't. There even I am helpless. So as long as if my eyes go, I'm blind, it's okay. But I am that consciousness. Same way at this moment, you know, I am identified with my voice, so I'm the speaker. You are identified with the ear, so you become a shrota. Listener, you are identified with the ear, but after some time, if the identification drops, then what happens? From Shrota, you become Sota. You fall asleep. It's a little difference. So, because why? Because I'm still here, but I'm not identifying with my ears. So, when I'm identifying with my ears, I become a listener with my pranas. Say, I'm hungry or I'm thirsty. No, I am not hungry or thirsty. My body is. It's the physiological functions of the body that give rise to hunger, thirst, fatigue. So the body is eating, I am not eating. The body is hungry, that's why these great sages could fast for days and weeks. When they go into meditation for months and years, they don't eat. So how can a person survive for years without eating? Why? Because they are no longer identified with the body. They are one with that consciousness. The body, it is said, it slows down its metabolism. It drops, the heart rate drops to about 10 or 12. The respirations drop to just 1 or 2 when they are in that deep samadhi. So they can survive for years. They are no longer identified with the body. So then if a person says, if I am not this body, then should I jump from the second floor? Yeah, you can. No, really. Realized master, even if he jumps from the second floor, his leg will break. He says, yeah, my leg is broken, but nothing has happened to me. The body will go through its dharma. If you jump from the second floor, the leg will break, but I am not the body. Not that somebody will deliberately do it, but example is of Raman Maharishi. It is said that when he had to have abdominal surgery, he actually told them, I do not want any anesthesia. And he just went into that yogic, you know, trance, the samadhi. And they operated on his stomach and took out a tumor and closed him up without anesthesia. And he got up. They said, are you done? Yes. He got up and walked. So they can do that because they are not identified with the body. You and I, for us, we are still at the body level. So at the body level, if you jump from the second floor, no doubt your leg will break and you have to go get a cast. Or if you didn't jump, you accidentally fell from the second floor. Or you're climbing a tree and you fall. You know, obviously, or if your leg breaks, you go get the, you know, cast put on. But inside, you have to understand that I am not the leg. The leg is broken, but I am not broken. So that is the essence of this verse. He says, this consciousness is eternal, unknowing, unknowable. It's not unknowing, it's unknowable. And does not do anything. But the consciousness is like the lamp in the theater, which illumines all the activities, but itself is not involved. So one who thinks that the consciousness kills or gets killed or propels killing, all three are ignorant. Ubhav tauna vijanita. They do not know, both of them do not know. Nayam hanti nahanyate. That is the message of this beautiful verse. We have 2 or 3 minutes if anybody has any questions. Slowly by repeated, so the same ideas will come throughout the Gita. It will come again in the 5th chapter, It will come in the ninth chapter. It will come in the 13th chapter. So just be patient and just for now, just accept it. Okay, Bhagavan has said, okay, Bhagavan, I believe you. Just do it with that. And then slowly these ideas will become clearer. And I'll try my best, as much effort as I can do, to bring stories, examples, to make it a little interesting so that people don't fall asleep. I try my best, but, you know, if I can, I'm able to explain, you know, it's the Lord's and my Guru's grace, because I read 2, 3, 4 commentaries and try to summarize. So that's...
So when people do this killing and everything, what propels them?
That's their vasanas. That's their tendencies, the vasanas, because they have these negative vasanas accumulated over many lifetimes and in this lifetime itself. So it is these vasanas, if they are negative, then that propels them to kill. The same vasana, when it is positive for a saint, it propels him to help others. So it depends on what kind of vasanas you and I have. If we have good vasanas, we'll do good. If we have bad vasanas, we'll do bad. The idea is to go beyond good and bad to that one consciousness. So, and then over this lifetime, suppose somebody has been brought up in a very bad home where he was mistreated by his parents, beaten, left, you know, father was in jail, mother is on drugs. So he'll grow up bitter. You know, some people grow up to be very evolved, even in that bad situation. Some people grow up to be very bitter, and so they become killers and murderers. So it's how these vasanas are developed over many lifetimes. But in this life itself also, you know, the circumstances can make you a killer. They become very angry, they become very bitter at the world, you know, they were beaten, they were mistreated, they were molested. So there are, we don't know what circumstances they have gone through. I don't see anything wrong with that. If what is your Shraddha, what is your faith? If you feel that the beggars need to be fed, that's, you know, it depends where your faith is. But it does not mean you have to make the Swamis wait. If you have told them that I'm going to be at 12 o'clock, bring lunch, and at 12 o'clock you're feeding the beggars, that's wrong. But if you want to feed the beggars, go at 11 o'clock and feed them. And if that's what, again, it depends on your Shraddha. I don't see anything good or bad or anything wrong or right. But what I'm saying is the idea, what is the motive behind your, you know, the service? If you want to serve the poor, that's fine. Go at 11 o'clock, feed all of them at 12 o'clock, which is lunchtime at the mission. I take food for all the students. Or another way, in fact, there was a Raman Maharishi. When they brought food for him first and they were going to feed the beggars afterwards, he said no. He said, we are all one. So he actually himself took the food and served all and sat and ate with them. Even though they had said, oh, we have brought food for you, Swamiji, first, and then we are going to feed the others. So it depends on your Shraddha. Thank you very much. Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinaha, Sarve Santu Niramayaha, Sarve Bhadrani Pashyantu, Ma Kashche Dukkha Bhag Bhavet. Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi. Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namah.